There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this little Friday edition of the show. And a lot to do on today's show. John Sharp's going to join us in a little bit. Also, we'll check in with Kyle Hamrick from over at Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. And I should start off saying, too, that locals only Christmas, you know, you're within a... probably shouldn't have to tell you, but you're within a week of Christmas now, so maybe you want to take advantage of that right now. Go check out the Locals Only Christmas list over at fmtalk1065.com. You can do it there, and you can also do it through our Facebook page, facebook.com/fmtalk1065. All right, what do we need to remind you of? Oh, yeah, phone line, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106 will get you through to us. Also, if you have the FM Talk 1065 app, you can use that talkback feature there. All you got to do is hit the microphone icon on the app on the front page. You press that, and the next thing you know, unless you record a message, sends it to us right here at the show. We can play it back there as well. All right. And also, as we get started, too, if we want to talk about roundabouts, we can. I know they got to be a little bit of the conversation. And by the way, too, you can vote for who you think Alabamian of the Year is. Looks like it's not going to be roundabout, but that voting's going on our website, fmtalk1065.com. And text line here. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Let me do this, Leanna, and I know you're running things back. I'm at the remote location here for the show. If we will, why don't we do this? Why don't we go to a news break a little bit early here, and then we'll come back and get this settled and be ready, squared away and ready to go. So if you can do that, Leanna, I'll give you a little heads up.
Another great tip.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5, and technology's great till it didn't. Actually, the technology did fine. It was a human operating it, and satellites and all that kind of good stuff. All right, welcome back, Midday Mobile, 343-0106. Like I said, John Sharp coming up in just a little bit. Also, Kyle Hamrick in hour number two. And I did see, we get to the news of the day, we'll get to the text line and all that, but I mentioned this story yesterday and then couldn't find it in my stack, and I have now found it again. This is something to be thinking about, pet lovers out there. Listen to this, because I was talking to a buddy the other day that had pet insurance. He did the pet insurance, and he said, I thought it wasn't the best choice when I did it, and then the dog had to have lots of surgeries and all that stuff, and it paid for itself. But then the other side of this, get this, this is from Forbes. Here's the headline. Lawyer sues the IRS. All right, everybody's like, okay. Demanding the IRS recognize pets as legal dependents. So this is from Kelly Phillips over at Forbes. It says, Americans love their pets. Dogs sleep at the foot of the bed. Cats rule the entire household. Pet photos, videos draw millions of likes on social media. It's no surprise, then, that nearly all U.S. pet owners, 97% of them, say pets are part of their family. So why not be able to deduct what you spend on them? It says 94, okay, U.S. households, about 94 million families own one or more pet. Pets are not considered part of the family for tax purposes. Probably, I don't know, maybe because they're not human beings. I know that you believe Mr. Snuggles is, but it's still an animal. But listen, so here's the challenge, and maybe there's some people who have spent big money on pets. You're thinking this might work for you. A recently filed case in district court aims to change all this. Amanda Reynolds, who's an attorney licensed in New York and Utah, who focuses largely on civil litigation and insurance defense, recently filed a complaint in the Eastern District of New York together with Finnegan, Mary Reynolds. Finnegan is the dog. Okay, so Finnegan is, I guess, listed on this as well. So you got the attorney, and she's going to sue. I mean, you talk about having some gumption. You sue the IRS, but you're suing the IRS and asking for, if this will be landmark if it comes through, suing to have Finnegan, her 8-year-old golden retriever, as her dependent. So the dog is, here's the argument the attorney makes. Her 8-year-old golden retriever entirely dependent on her for food, shelter, medical care, training, transportation, daily living. Finnegan also has no independent income. Yeah, there's no W-2 on Finnegan, I guess what she's saying. And Finnegan resides exclusively with her and has annual expenses exceeding $5,000. That means, Reynolds argues, that Finnegan satisfies every meaningful element of dependency recognized under Section 152 of the Internal Revenue Code, except not being a human, right? So according to the complaint, so here it is. If you're following along, and you can see the story over on Forbes, I can put it up on the X feed if I need to. But you can find it over there. I mean, it's the only story about claimant dogs as dependents. I think it's the only one. It says right here, Reynolds says that Finnegan's care responsibilities mirror and sometimes surpass those of human dependents. Reynolds writes that, quote, for all intents and purposes, Finnegan is like a daughter and is definitely a dependent. Despite this, Reynolds notes the tax code does not allow relief for taxpayers who shoulder the financial burden of companion animals, even though it provides various credits and deductions, such as a child tax credit, dependent care credit, earned income tax credit, all for human dependents. I will argue, in looking at some of this yesterday, there are, for service dogs, if you have a service dog, you do have deductions for the service dog. But back to this. This is not, Finnegan, not a service dog, just a dog. So Reynolds claims that this results in arbitrary and unfair tax burdens for taxpayers who provide financial support for human dependents. They get the benefit of the tax breaks, while dog owners who provide similar levels of care receive none. This is what's screwed up, too. This is where we are, where I love dogs. And like cats, okay, too. They're not human beings. But back to the story here. Says her argument, this unequal treatment, she says, lacks a rational bias or rational basis, especially considering the IRS's own recognition that some animals, specifically service dogs, may qualify for tax advantages. Reynolds argues that from a financial standpoint, there's no real difference between service animals and companion animals. Does this see the Supreme Court? Lawsuit alleges that the current tax law violates both the Equal Protection Clause and the Takings Clause. The Equal Protection Clause is part of the 14th Amendment, we know, and says the government must apply its law and cannot treat people differently without valid reason. The Takings Clause, which I was not familiar with, is part of the 5th Amendment and requires just compensation for private property. Okay, so that's the Takings Clause. Treating similarly situated taxpayers differently solely based on whether their dependents are human, Reynolds says, is discrimination, and she claims that denying a tax break for supportive pets constitutes wrongful taking because a lack of an available deduction results in a higher tax bill for that taxpayer. Taking all that into consideration, Reynolds says, this justifies recognizing dogs as, quote, quasi-citizens entitled to limited civil recognition, including dependency status for tax purposes, end quote. So here's the idea. This is, this case... So Reynolds argues that the case is not frivolous or meritless and warrants serious consideration by the court. So we'll see what comes back. The ruling so far under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure, discovery can be stayed for a good cause, but simply filing or planning to file a motion to dismiss does not automatically qualify. Courts usually consider at least 3 factors: whether the defendant has shown the claims are likely without merit, whether discovery would be extensive or burdensome, and whether a stay would unfairly prejudice the non-moving party. So this is interesting. This is, if this happens here, yeah, I appreciate dog pictures coming in. Thank you on the text line. If this happens, do we have are we going to have like a class action that everybody's going to move together for the IRS to change the code? And we've heard this before in so many things we talk about is whether something has standing or not, right? And it says here, the question is whether, I mean, it didn't say standing on four legs, but whether something has standing or not. It says, applying the principles here, a standing is a legal term that prefers your right to bring a lawsuit or have your court hear your case or to be heard. You typically have to show another party has harmed you. And the other only fix for that harm is to be found in court. I don't know that she can't. I mean, I don't. I think this is. I do think it's frivolous, but she has an argument. If the law here, and if you'll read through that story over at Forbes, they're talking about they don't. The code doesn't talk about. I guess it assumes that's the danger, right? It assumes that we're talking about human dependence. It kind of defines what a human dependent is. Now she has kind of met that bar. Because it, for the children, it's like no income of their own, you know, dependent in your household, all those things. She, her argument is this dog fits that. Further in her lawsuit, Reynolds does not allege that she actually attempted to claim her dog as a dependent or suffered an actual injury. So what the court is arguing, too, is like, well, this is theoretical, right? So she would have to, I guess, try. It goes on to say other issues with the complaint. An impact standing, including a anti-injunction act and declaratory judgment act, generally bars challenges to tax assessments and collections. So one of the things they're saying here is she would have to file. She would have to get busted, is the way I read it, in Sullivanese. She would have to try to file for Finnegan the dog, as a dependent, take the deductions, and then have an, I guess, IRS audit. They come out and say, what are you claiming here? And she says, it's the dog. And then they impose a penalty or whatever, and at that point she can take it to court. So it says in the story further on, the constitutional claims, it said no constitutional claims. Finally, complaints aren't allowed to proceed when, quote, the allegations in complaint, however true, could not raise a claim of entitlement to relief. While the offended party here didn't officially, oh, the court didn't officially rule on the merits of the case, the judge did note the 14th Amendment does not apply to federal agencies and that the Fifth Amendment takings claim is unlikely to succeed. The mere payment of taxes does not constitute a compensable taking. Also notice that laws and tax court precedent make clear animals cannot qualify as dependents under Section 152 of the tax code. So there you go. There's the push. Now I'm seeing some of y'all. Yeah, I don't know. So this texter just asked, so will my four dogs have to have social security numbers? I don't know. Because you make a good point that the attorney that did not come up in this story over at Forbes, because your children do, right? If your dependents do. So, yeah, everybody, and people say, well, what about people that are not your children? You can have other kind of dependents, but we think they all have social security numbers, right? Would they be available for EID? Child tax, I guess, earned income. I don't know exactly. I think she's just saying, I don't know. People are asking me what part of the tax code is she or what deduction. They listed a bunch of them here. I think she is just saying, hey, anything that you would claim as for dependents, right? You're filing and you got your dependents in the house. You should be able to do with with a dog. Great. Oh, and Jason said, so Sean, the clear solution is to place Finnegan on government assistance. Now, here we go. Is this the threshold where we'll cross into government subsidies for dogs? Be like, you're below the poverty level, so therefore, in your house, the dogs will receive a check. Do you get money? You have money to pay for, like, the a dog house? I don't know. Like, this is all news to me, but this is the story I saw yesterday. It's something. So there is at least an attempt here. Will it be successful? We don't know. But an attempt here to qualify your dog as a dependent. And I guess cats, they keep saying dog in the story. I think maybe the argument could be made that cats aren't really, cats don't think they're dependent on us. They're pretty sure that they don't need us. And the second you stumble and fall and break your neck, they're going to start eating you. I mean, so I hear, but it does say dogs are here. But then what other pets? It should be every pet, right? Every pet. So there you go. We'll try to get this linked up over on the X feed, but it's at Forbes, and it's something to think about here going forward. Lawyer sues the IRS demanding it recognize pets as legal dependents. dependence. Right, I mentioned before we go to the news, speaking of, I mean, pets get Christmas gifts, right? So they get that. Our locals only Christmas list is up. Two places to get it. So you can go to fmtalk1065.com, our website. Imagine that. Along the top there, you'll see a tab that says locals only Christmas. If you click that, it brings up the list. It shows you what the gift item is and who makes it or writes it or cooks it or anything like that. And then a link where you can go to and buy it. And these items are, some of them you're not going to be able to have shipped to you. Some can, but some you might need to go. I mean, some of them are local enough. You need to go buy their business, right? Pick it up have them meet you somewhere and deliver it. So there's all kind of different stuff on there, but they're really cool gift items and things you might want to have under the Christmas tree. You can also find that list on, on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065. And then while you're there on the website, we are in round one and I think the second heat of Alabamian of the year. And this is your chance to tell us who you think the person, place, thing, event that most moved the news cycle in 2025 in the state of Alabama. This is completely ripped off from Time's Person of the Year. And so these aren't always like your favorite thing. It could be, but it could be good. It could be bad. It's the thing that most moved the news cycle in this last year. In this round going up today, your choices are Mobile Mayor Spiro Chirigatis, U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville, Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch, the inflatable Fairhope protest penis. Sounds like an ill-thought-out movie. St. Michael's head coach and NFL quarterback Philip Rivers and the Red Clay Strays. So that's this heat. If you want to get in and vote, you do that on the front page of fmtalk1065.com right there on the right-hand column. Get those votes in, and then we'll announce more tomorrow. And then by the end of the month, if you hadn't played this game, by the end of the month, we will crown one Alabamian of the year. That thing, that animal, that person that plays that event will get listed and will be widely panned or celebrated. Not exactly sure. All right, coming back after the news, we'll check in with John Sharp. He's with AL.com. Lots to talk about with him and Kyle Hamrick in hour number two. And I can read some dog-dependent texts here during the break and be right back.
John Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 1065 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Thursday edition of the show. Good time to check in with my buddy John Sharp from AL.com. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean. How you doing?
Doing good. As we get into our conversation, so we had a story in the first half of the hour. The story over in Forbes magazine has this attorney. She can practice, I don't know, it says she can practice in New York and Utah. I don't know why that's important, but she's suing the IRS to claim her dog is a dependent. Makes the argument that the dog is no different than a child. And she spends money on it and should be able to deduct that from the taxes. What do you think, John? Would y'all have a pet?
We do have a pet. I don't think I want to get entangled with the IRS over over my buddy. I truly believe there's that pets are akin to one's child, there is that emotional attachment there. But I don't think that there's a deeper story to be told there. There's a lot of congressional action I think that would have to be done. There's a lot. I'll be listening to the State of the Union and see if this is brought up.
Sounds like an attorney that has some extra time. She has some extra time on her hands and has a skill set to file this. So yeah, it was like, will this be the next place? And at this point, they just talk about dogs in the story, but if you're going to do dogs, then how about cats? And then how about like hamsters? And I, like, where do we go with this?
No, we have a dog and a cat, and both of them are both good pets. They're part of the family, indeed, yes. But as far as pushing the envelope with the IRS, you're right about a lot of time on your hands.
All right, a lot to talk about with you. The first up here, this is John's the guy that broke the story to me, and it was probably a week ago Monday or maybe 2 weeks ago. No, a week ago Monday, I think. John was at Mobile County Commission meeting. And came on with us and said, "Hey, Sean, by the way, the county is saying that the city has got back rent to them down at Government Plaza." That set off a lot of conversations going forward.
So, yes, it has. And it's interesting because you and I, for years, talk about the greatest hits stories. But occasionally there's a new one that's added into the play mix. And here we go. This is one that I think is going to be around for a while. Maybe eventually it becomes the greatest hits. I don't know. But I suspect that it's going to be something that's going to tower over Mobile and Mobile City, Mobile County government discussions, and probably even bleed into the state legislative session in 2026. This is definitely a big issue. It was raised initially during a Mobile County Commission meeting. You're correct. It was brought up initially by Commissioner Randall Dewitt. It prompted some biting remarks on the county commission during that commission meeting in regards to what they said was a lack of rent payments from the city of Mobile for their space, in the South Tower of Government Plaza. The city of Mobile has for years rented space for its own city hall purposes at Government Plaza. And that was brought up a couple weeks ago, and it has dominated the local news in the last 2 weeks when it comes to public government coverage.
Yeah, and we'll get back to the two sides here, which I've argued. I think what we're doing, if we're just watching a negotiation, that's my theory at this point, because $12 a square foot is not enough. Listen to the county folks and talk about it. It seems like it's barely covering utilities, or maybe not even. $24 a square foot, which is RSA Tower. I'm here to say that Government Plaza is not up to that level of niceness. So the number is probably in between. But your headline here, y'all listen to this. City of Mobile has paid at least $61 million in rent at Government Plaza since 95. Now, that's cumulative here and changes over time, right? There have been hikes on the price per square foot since 95.
Yeah, that's correct. There has been. 95, it was, I don't have the number right.
I think you said $8, $8.50 or something like that.
Yeah, $8.50 per square foot. That's correct. And, that was the original agreement. I did talk to State Representative Sam Jones, who was on the Mobile County Commission at the time. He was part of the negotiations of the original lease agreement. And, his indication that back then, I think the idea was this kind of intergovernmental cooperation, bring everything under one building. And it's been 30 plus years ago now that, this was initially hammered out. And it was kind of interesting, in the backdrop of all of this, we have the Mobile City Council meeting at the old City Hall, which is now the museum, the History Museum of Mobile on Royal Street. They do that once a year meeting at Old City Hall in order to keep a designation of that building as being one of the oldest city halls in the country. We were all kind of joking with Mayor Cherry Elgadas whether or not, this could be, you might have to move back into the building.
Well, I was wondering, too, if it was like a little bit of a threat. I mean, and that is interesting, too, the fact that it's, the longest continually used city building in America there. But
it's not the, but it's one of them, yes.
But I did wonder if it was going to be this kind of like, okay, well, we could just go right over here. I mean, we'll just go over here to the old building. We could, we don't need you at the plaza.
Nah, easier said than done. That building's a museum. It's laid out very, that's the purpose now for it. It
was sure.
Probably significant infrastructure. And do they even want to do that? But it's an option. It could be an option. But back to the original agreement, it's changed over the years. You're correct. There was a point in time, I think it was in 2014, in which there was a renegotiation of the agreement. The records we got back indicated there was a certain amount that was paid in rent per year versus expenses. It went up proportionally over a period of time, but then somewhere around 2020, you know, there was a, the current agreement was put into place. So it's been put into place for 5 years now, where they're paying the same amount, or they have paid the same amount for 5 years, which is the county has come back. Apparently, they came back in the month of June and said that's we're no longer going to honor that agreement anymore. We, you know. This is why they're seeking essentially a 90% increase in what the city should be obligated to pay the county for rent and for utilities in the building. Their claim is that, yeah, these utilities have gone up significantly. Insurance has skyrocketed on the building, and the city should partake in some of those expenses, that increased expenses. Mayor Cherry Ogatis has come back and said, you know, the city really shouldn't be on the hook for this skyrocketing cost of insurance. So here we are. Yeah, you're right. It's kind of been this negotiation put out in the public.
Well, I mean, and having two government agencies in this debate, but you're saying, well, we shouldn't be on the hook for the rising cost. Well, any of us that lease space, you know, whether you're renting a house or you're leasing space for a business or whatever, if their costs go up, you're going to have to pay it. I mean, that's just... You know, unless there was a profit margin that was so big in there, they can absorb it, right? I mean, if they say, hey, we got a rent's going up this year because our costs are going up. I mean, this conversation I've had leasing space over the years.
That's correct. And I thought it was kind of interesting. I did interview the mayor since that county commission meeting. And he indicated that, you know, it's his understanding that perhaps the county has use for some of the city space. I didn't know that was the case. That's something that we still... We need to get a better explanation on from the county. There's some unanswered questions still, but again, it sounds like, you know, what would typically be a negotiation a little bit more privately has come out in the public because you're dealing with two public bodies in a very public facility. Everything's very public involved in this. Also, what's interesting, and I'm going to dive into this as well here shortly, but how rare this is, a city the size of Mobile basically renting out its city hall. And that's got, I think, some city council members, this is kind of like triggered this idea of, is this the way we want to do this going forward? Should we have our own building? And what does that look like? And we're having these conversations that, you know, a month ago, you and I would have never even thought about talking about on the radio. I mean, this is something that's really come up, and it's a big story, I think, you know, going forward, especially 2026. We're going to talk about the Civic Center a lot. You know, the construction of that's going to be about this time next year. We're going to be talking about, you know, what that's going to be looking like. There's going to be a lot of pressure to get that facility built. But will Government Plaza be right adjacent to it with city offices? You know, that's I didn't think about even having that discussion not too long ago. So this has really all become quite new, but it's a fascinating issue, and it's a very Mobile issue. You're not going to have this discussion in Birmingham, per se, or Huntsville, or any city across the bay, you know, where Daphne and Spanish Fort have their own city hall buildings. Mobile does not have a building that says city hall, except for the old history museum.
That's right. But, you know, this also that argument, though, as this goes through a negotiation, both sides need each other. Like, number one, let's say the city of Mobile moves out of the building. And I know I talked to Commissioner DeWitt and others. They said, well, we could put law offices or whatever in there. But they're not going to fill up the 127,000 square feet or whatever it is the city does. All right. So that's number one. The city, this argument that they're going to go find another place and, you know, they could go out there and find a new building and put themselves in it. That's going to cost a lot of upfront money. Like you just talk about all the money flowing out for right now for the city with the Civic Center build and all that, the arena and all that. They're probably going to be short on that. They both need each other in this, I think, right? I mean, both have leverage.
You're correct. The city occupies approximately 28% of the building space. That's the most, that's the largest tenant in Government Plaza. So, yes, to leave, to vacate 5.5 stories on the South Tower is pretty significant. And the city also occupies, they have their municipal court in the building as well. So it's more than just 5.5 stories. It's, you know, they have a sizable presence there. However, the city is also looking, and I remember talking to Mayor Stimson about this before he left office. He had indicated to me that there was interest, and had he ran again and served another 4-year term, he would have looked into the prospects building what we call a justice center, basically, in a nutshell, a new police headquarters. There's been that discussion for quite some time. What does that look like? The police headquarters on Government Street, and Mayor Ciro Gatta said he has toured that facility. I think there's pretty much a general consensus that there's a need for an eventual replacement there. So this is interesting. I mean, there is a building need here for the city of Mobile. What that looks like going forward, I think it's going to be a big story in 2026. You know, where does it, you know, we talked about it last year with the city rolling off some debt, some long-term debt by 2030. Although the Civic Center is essentially new debt, but they're going to be rolling off several large bond notes by 2030. So, I mean, could that be something that the city looks at going forward as far as addressing some of these issues? So it's going to be interesting to see where that appetite is at from the council and from the mayor's administration. I just think that this is something that we're going to be talking about. Could it be a greatest hit, Sean? I think perhaps it could be. Building needs in the city for Mobile public services.
And also, I mean, yes, and the amount of, it's not going to happen, but the picture drama of let's say the city continues to like, yeah, we're going to pay you rent, the old rent. We're not going up to the new number, whatever, you know, and then they have to evict the city. And then you have to bring in the Mobile Police Department.
Right. He goes, well, I got a good relationship with the sheriff. Well, could you imagine? That's kind of awkward. We're going to be in the middle of a campaign season. Who's going to show up to do the eviction? Here we go. So all sorts of, we can talk about absurd possibilities, but I don't know.
Well, listen, there's some things that, like John said, this could be a greatest hits because there have been things that we thought that John and I've talked about over a decade and a half that we think, oh, well, this story will, you know, we'll be done with this story and a month or something like that, and we're still talking about them. I'm reading a story today about the water, you know, about Water Street and you know, what's got to be done with Water Street, and I realized the things that Mayor Chirigatis was saying about Water Street is the same stuff that Mayor Stimson was saying 12 years ago sitting on my show. I mean, some things are perennial.
That's correct, and you know, we could go back before you were on the radio and I was covering this area. I mean, this was you know, the developing Water Street was something that has been discussed for quite some time, but and relooking at Water Street in a different light other than an industrial venue facility. But Mayor Ciro Gatta is interested in pursuing this. Mayor Stimson's still, I guess, providing some advice or assisting Mayor Ciro Gatta in this, because Mayor Stimson was very interested in this as well, as reducing the size of Water Street. Apparently, they had a meeting with the Federal Highway Administration this week, I believe, to discuss this further. And they're looking at different design possibilities. I know at one point there was discussions about building one of those diverging diamonds on Water Street, but I don't know if logistically that's going to be possible or not. They're just kind of floating out ideas on what they potentially could do there in order to get some of the truck traffic off, because I think the idea or the hope is that as they're moving forward with redeveloping Cooper Riverside Park, that'll be opening up next year, and all the money and interest that's being expended into revitalizing the Maritime Museum, they want to get people across Water Street safely to get to these public facilities. And of course, you have the cruise terminal there that brings big crowds and bigger ships here soon. So, I think that's long term. They want to address that. And Mayor Ciro Gatta said, he kind of threw it out there. He said, "Well, I'd like to see if we can make an entertainment district out of Water Street in the future." And so there's a vision there. I think he's interested in doing a master plan eventually. And he talked about assembling a task force next year to look into that and to kind of lead that master planning effort. So that's something that warrants attention.
Hey, John, people would, obviously they can check out this story a whole lot more at AL.com. And if they want to reach out to you directly, or, I use it when I follow you on X, because you'll be at council meetings or commission meetings or these things with breaking news out there. They can follow you on that. How do they find you?
Yeah, X or you know, other social media sites, at John Sharp 99.
Okay, you on Farmers Only or not?
On what?
On Farmers Only, or you're there, you have a presence there as well? Okay, just
no,
checking.
No, you don't have to worry about. No, I'm not on that one.
All right, John. Thank you, man.
All right, Sean.
All right, there he goes, my friend John Sharp with AL.com, and we're coming right back for Midday Mobile next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, it's Midday Mobile on a Thursday. Hi, I'm Sean. Phone number 343-0106, 251-343-0106 for a text or a phone call. I'm sitting here calculating, you know, with they're saying the fifth largest Powerball jackpot ever is what we're looking at here, like the $1.5 billion. You know, because I'm pretty sure I'm going to win this thing. I was looking at the how they calculate the taxes on Powerball. I think it's pretty interesting. Like, one I had a question. It's like, okay, so let's say you drive from Alabama, but you drive into Florida, right, to buy the ticket. Florida doesn't have any income tax. So it says you may be, it says here, maybe somebody's a lottery tax expert out there. It's a very narrow field, but it could be, I guess. Says if you bought your winning ticket in a different state than you purchased. Okay, yeah, if you bought your winning ticket in a different state than the one you reside in, you may be on for paying taxes in both states. The state where you purchased the ticket is going to withhold non-resident tax. Because I was thinking, like, if you won in Florida, they don't have it's lottery, it's income, right? It's treated as an income. So, but you're not a resident there, so they would report you to Alabama, and Alabama then, through nothing that they did, our state would get tax revenue from lottery winnings, even though we don't have a lottery in another state. Interesting. Like, and if you're pretty sure you're going to win the lottery, should you? Like, okay, let's look around here. We got Mississippi and Florida, right? You could drive into either and get that lottery ticket. You probably should. I guess it helps you to, because in Mississippi, wouldn't you have to pay? So I think the this is because it's only when you're very sure you're going to win the lottery, like I am. You would have to go. I would go to Florida, right? Go to Florida to purchase the ticket. See that logic? Something like that. Let's see. Let's talk about, speaking of money here, we come back, we can talk about the dog stuff too. people are talking about board of directors. I don't know, the case, and what we started talking about in the beginning is the lady only listed her dog as a dependent. I don't know, she did not talk about cats at all in this thing, but if you want to jump on board, maybe you can join the lawsuit with her. Just sue the IRS, see how that works for you. Coming right back.